cures for human illnesses. Using animals is costly, it's cruel, inefficient, and it's old-fashioned. Sophisticated non-animal research methods using whole human DNA, for example, is where our money should go. Help us insist on modern research. Rate People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. That's PETA, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Welcome, Alka Chandna, and you're the spokesperson for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and you have a very special place in our heart because of the work you do.
You're very kind, Carl. Well, that's reciprocated. Thank you so much for having us on your program today.
Well, no, you know, but people often say vivisection, and they don't really know what it means. So maybe you can give us a sort of a lowdown, because that's your specialty at PETA.
Yes, that's true, Carl. Definitely, I'd love to do that. Well, you know, hundreds of millions of animals are used in laboratories around the world. In Canada, the number is around 2.5 million, according to the Canadian Council on Animal Care. Now, to imagine what these animals' lives are like, imagine living your entire life in a phone booth. Basically, you can take one step in each direction, but that's essentially it. You have no control over anything that you do. You're fed meals through the day, but it's the same stuff all the time. You have nothing to engage your mind, and the only interaction you have with anybody else is when somebody picks you up to perform some kind of invasive, perhaps painful, confusing, distressing procedure on you. People think that perhaps animals are treated well. That's not true. People think that perhaps laws protect animals. Again, not true. There are laws in place, but these laws are really housekeeping regulations that dictate the size of the cage, the humidity, the temperature, these sorts of things. But in Canada, as well as in the United States, there is no law that prohibits any type of procedure on an animal, no matter how pointless, no matter how cruel, no matter how duplicative. So it's a pretty sad situation for animals.
Now, what are the? It's so much of it is they're expanding the animal experimentation laboratories at the University of British Columbia and at Simon Fraser University. But so, what kind of stuff are they doing there? And why do they validate it? Or what are the arguments that counter that this is not good science?
Sure, Carl. Well, you know, at the University of British Columbia, for example, there are experimenters there who are drilling holes into the skulls of marmoset monkeys. They will inject a toxin into the brains of the monkeys to basically get the monkeys to be off balance, to give them some kind of brain injury so that their behaviors will mimic what we see in people with Parkinson's. But these experimenters know perfectly well that what they're giving the animals is not Parkinson's disease. It's something that then has symptoms that look like Parkinson's, but it's not the disease. Meanwhile, there are other experimenters at UBC, again, who are giving electroconvulsive shock therapy treatments to induce seizures in monkeys. You know, the history of doing neurological studies on monkeys is so long. For decades it's been done, and really they've gotten nothing from it. So many stroke drugs have been developed using monkeys, but these drugs only work in the monkeys. They have never worked in human beings. There was an Alzheimer's vaccine that was withdrawn in 2001 because it caused serious brain inflammation in patients, even though it had been studied and proven, quote-unquote, to be safe and effective in monkeys. You know, the problem is that even when you're looking at primates who are so much like us, you know, they're social beings, they have advanced cognitive abilities, they have such interesting personalities, they're individuals, and even though they are so much like us, in trying to translate results that you get from monkeys to human beings, it simply does not work.
So aspirin kills cats and penicillin kills guinea pigs. Why don't these scientists just get it? I mean, it's beyond me.
You're right. You know, Carl, that's a $100 million question. And maybe in saying that, I've answered the question. I mean, it really is an issue of money. You know, there are grants being given in Canada by groups like NSERC, which of course is federal, the National Sciences and Engineering Research Council, MRC, the Medical Research Council. These funding agencies are taking Canadian tax dollars and then doling them out, you know, in huge sums to all of these different vivisectors across the country. You know, there's another UBC experimenter who uses kittens to do sight experiments and to study the visual cortex. And he'll take these 4-week-old kittens to do these studies. They have a partnership with Dalhousie University out in Halifax. And in Halifax, what they're doing is they're taking kittens and they raise them in the dark for 4 months. So for 4 months, these kittens never see daylight at all. You know, some experimenters do something as vile as actually stitching the eyes closed of these animals or fitting them with goggles so they can't see anything. But, you know, it's absurd because the cat's eye is so different from the human eye. We know that when humans are born and they're visually impaired that there are developmental issues, but making cats suffer doesn't help the human beings. It doesn't give us insights into how you can help those human beings. So it's just adding to the amount of suffering in the world and not really addressing very much of anything.
Now you're talking about tax dollars, and that's a critical issue here, that you're explaining that. But we have these foundations like the Terry Fox Foundation and Rick Hansen, and they're considered to be icons, heroes. What kind of experiments are they doing?
Well, you know, certainly the funds that are raised by the Terry Fox Foundation and the other groups where you have people who suffer from certain diseases and they attain a certain iconic stature, you know, all of that money is being funneled into the same type of experimentation, which is painful. You know, there, for example, the spinal cord experiments that are being done, those are so hideous. And I read an experiment just earlier this morning at the University of Alberta, where experimenters have received a lot of money, and what they've been doing is they inflict brain and spinal cord damage on cats, and then they force the cats to walk on a treadmill. And the way they force the cats to walk on the treadmill is that they have basically a shock pad at the bottom of the treadmill, so if the cats don't walk on the treadmill, they get shocked, so they're forced to walk. And what the experimenters then do is they watch the way that the cats are walking. You know, you don't have to be a scientist to understand that cats have 4 legs. We have 2 legs. The difference in the structure of their spinal cord is sufficiently great that you don't want to be studying cats if you want to understand spinal cord injuries in human beings. You know, it really makes no sense at all. And again, we've seen that millions of animals have been used, billions of dollars have gone into this industry, and we really have nothing to show for it.
Now, you explained it very graphically about the cat, but, you know, this, the other thing is that the Rick Hansen, he's a wheelchair man in motion, and he had spinal cord injury, and so one would think that he would understand what it is like to break a spinal cord or have spinal cord injury. And that's exactly what he's doing to these sentient creatures. I mean, I feel really sad about that.
You're absolutely right, Carl. I mean, there should be greater empathy on the part of people who have been sick. And certainly we see wonderful groups like the Incurably Ill Against Animal Research, groups like that who speak out against the use of animals. But, you know, it's such exploitation because naturally we feel grief and we feel sorrow for people who are suffering. Most of us know people, you know, who have had cancer or heart disease or some such thing. But by funneling money into pointless experiments that will not give us the answers that we need, we're no further along. And instead, we see that animals have been exploited, human beings are being exploited, you know, suffering is being exploited, and it's just a compounding effect of more and more pain and suffering for no good reason.
Now, you explained the difference between humans and why should we be doing these tests on animals when humans when many of these experiments don't work on work on animals, but wouldn't work on a human body. But even with, maybe you can comment on this, that even within the human species, like Asians and Africans and Caucasians, different drugs have different effect on these do you call them?
you're exactly people. Right, Carl, and that's such an excellent point, because these days, you know, we hear people saying, well, we need to do more cardiac experiments on cardiac drugs for women, because the cardiac drugs research that has been done so far has been primarily focused on men. Or we hear about these differences in racial populations, ethnic populations, these sorts of things. And then you have to ask yourself, well, if you're testing a drug in a guinea pig or a rat or a mouse, exactly how will that be applicable to human beings if you can't take results applicable to men and say that they're applicable to women? And this shows the extent to which animal experimentation is such an old technology. It's outdated science. I mean, it never was science, but it's outdated methodology. You know, these days, the methodologies that we're talking about are so refined that we can talk about targeting drugs to certain populations, drugs that would be more effective in African Americans or in Asian Americans, you know, rather than Caucasians, let's say, or drugs that would be more effective in women. But clearly, when you're talking about going from one species, like a rodent species, to humans, you're not talking about that level of sophistication. So we really have to get beyond the use of animals and look at these sophisticated modern testing technologies that exist.
So maybe you can explain some of the modern techniques, something that is viable and which should be accepted. And I believe that many of the advanced universities are not expanding their animal labs, but are using different techniques that are more reliable.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Carl. And, you know, I should mention that just last summer there was a report published here in the United States by the National Academy of Sciences, which is the preeminent group of scientists that advises the government on scientific issues. And this report was called, and people can look this up online, Toxicity Testing in the 21st Century. And if you read that publication, the report that they authored, basically it reads like, you know, something that an animal rights person would say, somebody who is aware of these issues. You know, they would say, well, animal testing is crude. It's expensive, it's slow, and it doesn't give reliable results. And on the contrary, modern testing technologies are faster, they're cheaper, and they're more reliable. And that's exactly what the NAS report said. But, you know, some of these technologies include things like using the high-speed computational processes that we now have. You know, we have computing speed like we've never seen before, along with all the databases of biotechnology, genetic information. And this is where you get into knowing about differences between men and women, differences between different racial, ethnic populations, and so on. But you have all of these databases and understanding of biochemistry, how different chemical compounds interact with one another. And with high-speed computing, high-power computing, we can crunch all of that information and get then data about how certain compounds will interact with the body. And not just your body or my body, but we could say, you know, your co-host's body particularly, so that a drug could be really designed and tailored for one individual. You know, that really is the future of this technology. But we see that bioinformatics, which is basically what I've just described, is taking place today. It's being used in industry. There are also silicon wafers that are developed, and you know, one example is something called the Hurel chip. The Hurel chip, which is short for human on a chip, is essentially a silicon wafer, and the silicon wafer has different layers in it, and each layer represents a different organ system. So you'd have, and in those layers, they inject human cells from that organ system. So you might have in this chip, you might have one layer that represents the circulatory system, and another layer that represents the digestive system, another layer that, let's say, represents the liver, and so on. And then you would inject the chemical substance that you're testing into one end of the layer and into one end of the wafer, and then the substance would just interact with all the cells, and you could see if there are problems. You know, if you see that the cells in the liver compartment are dying, you know that the substance is going to be toxic to the liver. And then we're not talking about a rat liver or a mouse liver or a dog liver. We're talking about a human liver. So, you know, this is the sort of advancing science that we're seeing. The Hurel chip is one. The liver toxicity chip was developed by people at MIT and the University of California, San Diego. It's another chip. There's something called the virtual human, virtual organ systems. And here we're seeing that biologists, medical practitioners are getting together with people in Silicon Valley and putting together, again, high-speed computing, modeling principles, mathematical modeling, with knowledge of biosystems, and getting really advanced, robust systems whereby they can find out about drug efficacy, drug safety systems, and so on. By the way, I apologize for the noise. All of a sudden, they started doing construction outside of my apartment.
It's okay. We can hear you, Alka. Well,
okay.
No, your webpage is stopanimaltests.com. I think everybody should go and have a look at that, stopanimaltests.com. And we're speaking with Alka Chandna from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. My co-host, Marge, has a question for you.
Alka, I don't know if I can express this question very clearly, but I'm thinking about the laws. And I believe that animal testing is somehow part of our laws, and that they give a blind kind of an opportunity for the drug companies to excuse themselves if the drug doesn't work, and
right.
They can say, well, it did work on the animal, so, you know, our
right.
conscience is clear.
Yeah, Marge, you're absolutely 100% correct. This is a huge problem that we're facing. This is what we call regulatory testing, when the government requires that animals be used to test substances. Now, to be clear, the government requires that pharmaceutical compounds be tested on animals. Industrial chemicals have to be tested on animals, pesticides, herbicides, these sorts of things. And this is something that PETA has been challenging for quite a while now. Just a few years ago, the FDA in the United States, the Food and Drug Administration, which is the agency that requires these tests to be done on animals, these toxicity tests, the pharmaceuticals on animals, the FDA came out and they admitted that of all drugs that test safe and effective on animals, 92% are found to be either unsafe or ineffective in human beings. So you're talking about a 92% failure rate of animal use in drug testing. You know, so it's really no surprise when that's the case that we're seeing so many withdrawals. I think there was a government accountability survey that was done. They found that 52% of drugs that had been released over a certain period of time had been either withdrawn or relabeled for serious side effects that had not been found in animal testing.
And yet the companies were not held responsible for any of the results of those failures, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, it's a real challenge, you know, and this is always going to be the question, what happens in a court of law when a company is going to be challenged on this. But we have seen in our investigations that when companies, for example, we did an investigation inside Covance, which is a contract testing laboratory. It's the largest in the world. And they use animals, monkeys, dogs, and other animals to test drugs for their client companies, who are the big pharmaceutical companies. And what the pharmaceutical companies will do, we saw this in our investigation, is that, for example, they'll try to test a drug in one species, and maybe in that species they'll find that the drug was toxic. So they'll use another species. And they keep on going into different species until they find that they can put together the best picture possible for the drug so that they can finally get it into human beings, because that's what they want. So this ability to really shape the data to their liking introduces a profit motive into what's supposed to be a science, to really make for an unhappy situation for both animals and human beings.
Really frightening, isn't it, when you think of getting a prescription?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, after the animal tests, there are three stages of clinical tests, And, you know, what we try to point out, and, you know, we see this when we look at the clinical tests, is that after the animal tests, I mean, essentially with the animal tests, nothing is being done as far as ensuring safety. You know, as we said, a 92% failure rate. So the first people who are involved in the clinical tests, even though the doses are low, they really are, you know, the first guinea pigs, as it were. Mm-hmm. There was a case just last year in the UK where there was a drug, and it went into the first stage of clinical testing, so with human beings, and there were six very healthy, young, robust men who were enrolled in this testing, and all six of them became severely ill. They went into ICU, the intensive care unit. They were suffering through organ failure, and finally they were brought out, and nobody died, thank goodness. But all six men to this day have not worked. They've become very debilitated as a result of this whole thing. And the thing to remember about this case is that this drug that debilitated these men permanently was tested to be safe at 500 times the dose that was given to them in monkeys. It's such a failed system, and the tragedy of it is that animals are dying, human beings, you know, taking these drugs are unsafe, they put their own lives at peril. And meanwhile, there are fantastic technologies, modern technologies, sophisticated advanced technologies, using the wealth of all the science that's known to us that could be used. But, government works at a government snail's pace, and changing governmental requirements is very difficult. And, of course, here in North America, we're way behind what the Europeans are doing. In Europe, although the regulatory tests still exist for pharmaceuticals, there are many non-animal tests that are allowed and have been validated. About 34, 35 tests have been validated that are these, modern non-animal testing technologies. And by comparison, in the United States, only four have been validated.
Now, Alka, in your webpage, stopanimaltests.com, you also mentioned there, we only have a couple of minutes left here, that the World Wildlife Fund is providing funding for animal tests. I mean, that is so strange. I mean, that's on your webpage.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. You know, some of these environmental groups, especially the large bloated ones, find that they want to support animal tests. For example, NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, as you mentioned, Carl, the World Wildlife Fund. These groups want a lot of testing done of chemicals to ensure that they're safe for the environment. Now, we don't oppose that. We think that that's good. But we oppose that the test should be done on animals, for all of the reasons that we've already discussed. Again, in a sense, the environmental groups give power to the companies that are producing the chemicals, because the companies that are producing the chemicals, the various pesticides and so on, they can do what we just discussed. If they want to say, well, this chemical is safe for the environment, and they're going to do it by using animal tests, well, they can just find the species by going, from one species to the next, to the next, to the next, before they find those species for whom the chemical is safe. But that doesn't tell you anything about whether the chemical is going to be safe for humans. You still have a big wild card out there. So it seems to us that the environmental groups are doing the environment, wildlife, and human beings a great disservice by insisting on these animal tests. And we are continuing to push them to say, well, no, we shouldn't use animal tests, because these other tests are cheaper, faster, and more reliable.
So, Alka, if we're seeing that many of these reputable and well-known animal organizations like the WWF is promoting animal tests, then surely we should be looking at PCRM's, that's Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They have a cruelty-free label. So we should be looking at that to make sure that our donations are, in fact, animal cruelty free.
Absolutely. I mean, this is something, when we think about these issues of animal testing, animal experimentation, and all the whole gamut of issues with animal exploitation, it can be really devastating. But you're absolutely right. The positive side of this is that we hold so much power through the choices that we make with our consumer dollars and our donation dollars. So certainly when we donate to funds, to groups, we should be very careful, and we should seek out this knowledge. And as you say, Carl, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM.org, is a great place to go to get that information.
Now, in closing, Alka Chandra, we really appreciate you taking the time and being on Animal Voices. It's your webpage is stopanimaltests.com, and maybe you can just give us a little summary of what we've had here, and maybe close off with a note of optimism that there is reliable science there that is a viable alternative to animal tests, which are cruel and often fatal for humans.
Right. Well, you know, I would encourage people to go to stopanimaltest.com. You don't have to believe anything that I've said on this show, but you can see for yourself if you look at the video footage that we have shot in laboratories. These animals suffer so greatly. They control nothing of what they can do in their lives when they're incarcerated in these laboratories. So please take a look at what goes on with them. The workers are often underpaid, you know, the people who are technicians working in the labs, and they take out their frustrations on animals. So we've documented workers slapping animals, throwing them against cages, shaking them violently. And this is violence that I think when people see, they don't accept. So we are optimistic in that we know that if people could see what happens inside these laboratories, they would not accept that this is okay. It is not okay. And especially when you look at the payoff of what we've gotten for all of these animals to have been really tortured and killed in laboratories, it's absolutely not worth it. It's not something that can be justified. Something from which I derive a lot of optimism, and Carl, you referred to this or alluded to this earlier, so many medical schools these days don't use live animals in teaching anymore. And, you know, the top names that you can think of, Harvard, Stanford, Yale, all of the big Ivy Leagues and the big universities in Canada as well are not using animals for teaching in medical training, and that's really, you know, something, a reason for optimism. We see that the younger generation coming up is more sensitive to animals. They don't want to dissect. They don't want to be taking the lives of animals casually for the sake of getting a class credit. And I think that when you have that kind of sensibility, as these kids get older, they won't want to vivisect. They won't want to be joining that profession. And I think that's positive. And then finally, there's the science. The fact that we can get better results using better means that are both better scientifically and better ethically, I think, is a reason for optimism. So I look forward to a better world with a lot less suffering for animals, and it'll be better for people as well.
I think you've made the world a better place, and you've been just wonderful on this program for explaining it so clearly.
Well, you're very kind, Carl. I really, really respect the work that all of you are doing over there, and I love British Columbia, so my hat's off to all of you.
We look forward to you coming to visit. we look forward to you visiting, and thank you once again, and goodbye for now.